Java. Never thought we'd do an episode on that, did ya?
Java for serverless functions. Did I hear that right?
We get a chance to talk with Ottavio Santana, who is a Java champion, Kubernetes expert, and loves to make dad jokes, especially at David's expense.
And believe it or not, I actually left this episode kind of writing to want some Java. Maybe.
We did mention Rust, though. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to today's episode, Ottavio. You are going to teach us about something that I generally consider a curse word, and that is Java. But we're going to look at this in a fresh light and understand how to be successful with Cloud Native and Java on top of Kubernetes.
And we'll try not to talk about Rust, I guess, right? Is that the plan?
There's a plan, ours.
Okay.
But just to reply the answer, how can you use Java for Kubernetes and success? That's easy. Don't use Java.
That's not the answer I was expecting right off the bat. Fuck.
Well, all right. That was the end of the episode. We'll just keep on moving here. Thank you. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. So before we get into that, right? I know we're going to have a great conversation about Java, but I want people to understand who you are and what you've been up to. So for anyone who is not familiar with you and your work, please take a few moments to introduce yourself and share anything that you wish.
Okay. So super glad to be here. My name is Ottavio Santana. Most of the time, I do jokes. Mainly dad jokes. Sometimes, hardly ever, I do some code, especially around cloud native, especially because that is what I do love in the Java community, is help people to engage them and move the organization forward using the most effective techniques, using the Java enterprise certifications, for example, under the Jakarta. That is under Eclipse Foundation. So my goal is basically to help Java developers and software engineers to make them more effective and take advantage of open source and naturally exploring more about cloud, the cloud native perspectives.
Yeah, I love that you said to help people, but that you really write code. And right away, I was like, you're a consultant, aren't you?
Yes.
I took a look at your website and I clicked on the awards page and there was like 30 different things there. So you've been doing this Java stuff for a while. And I think you've even written like 8 books, right? So maybe you can give us a bit of history. How long have you been doing Java? What's your background? Anything else you want to show there?
It's a long time doing Java. More than I wish, by the way. You can see my white hairs. So since Java 8, I have been working Java. So if you hate Java on that time, sorry. I did my best to make Java as good as possible, but it's hard. I helped in several Java specifications through the JCP, where I become executive member of the JCP. So if you're not familiar with JCP, it's basically the organization who defines and drives the Java community. Java does not belong to Oracle at all. So we do have several organizations, several communities are working on the process in Java. We do have a huge ecosystem, people, organizations, enterprise, and so on. Even open source organizations such as Apache and Eclipse Foundation. And I have been working with Java since Java 8. And with the impact in moving the Java Enterprise to Eclipse Foundation, I went and to Eclipse Foundation work on those Java Enterprise. Where, yes, I received some awards like the JCP Awards, the All Categories, the Duke Choice Awards, that is the Oscar of Java, Eclipse Top Commuter, and so on. My secret is just don't have social life. Who cares about people, right? So just focus in code.
All right, awesome. So I'm going to date myself here, right? But I haven't written Java since Java, I'm going to say 1.4. I was in college. This was early 2000s. I didn't enjoy it. I never wrote it again. I dropped out of college. I hated it so much, actually, and got a job right in Perl, which, looking back, probably not my smartest move, but, you know, whatever. Tell me about the evolution of Java over the last, 10 to 15 years. Well, from Java 8 to where we are today, because obviously the language is evolving. It's modernizing. We have containers now. I'm assuming we don't just throw Tomcat servers on the internet and run our applications anymore. Like, what is and where is Java today?
So Java is in the version 23. Right now, we are 30 years old of history and experience, improvement in the language, for example, to handle with data with string API, a new API to handle with data. We have the coin project where the goal is to simplify the Java syntax, such as Diamond, to work with some generic keys on the best way as possible. We do have record to work with data. On the infrastructure way to say Java, we have several improvements on the JVMs, garbage collectors. Right now, we do have the T1 to work better and avoid the stop the words, the nightmare of anybody who has a huge application. Several improvements to modules and improvements to the container. When I mention container, don't think only about Docker. Think about the open container. And so this way that we are designed, the JVM right now is to make sure that almost all containers that have Java will take advantage of the JVM. So it's a totally different Java since Java 4. It's a huge, huge time ago.
Let's revisit your joke from the start of the episode. If you want to be successful with Java on Kubernetes, don't use Java, right? Let's actually dig into this a little bit. Because we're looking at the cloud native landscape today. Apple have just released Pickle, which is a config management, which was built in Java. We've got Kafka, which is the almost de facto service bus, queue, topic, whatever, a whole bunch of different things, right? It does a whole lot these days. Built on Java. We've got Elasticsearch built on Java. I mean, cloud native has a lot of Java components in its ecosystem, in production, shipping, and making money for a whole bunch of companies. So, are people being successful, but how do we get to this stage where Java isn't the enterprise software, it is the modern cloud-native microservice approach to building software?
Yeah, my first advice is work to the most up-to-date JVM as possible. I know several companies try to keep on Java 8, Java 4, and so on. But if you do that, you won't be able to take the most up-to-date enhancement on the JVM, for example, to work better with Kubernetes, with Docker, or any kind of container. If you take a look, for example, at the beginning of Java 8, every time that you work with Java in the container, there was an issue because for the JVM, there was not the container. It took the whole machine instead of considering just a container that is inside. Right now, we take that into consideration. So if the Java is running inside a container, we are taking a look in several enhancements in the sys operation as well. Right now, we do have more modern applications to avoid the huge start time that Java had. If you remember some time ago, Java took a couple of seconds to warm up the application. Right now, we do have several frameworks that can do it a couple of seconds, like any dynamic language. Okay, so Quarkus sometimes might be faster than Node.js because it can be converted to native language, for example. I can convert the JVM to native instructions using GraalVM, for example. So the Java ecosystem is huge. And the good way to take advantage of that in the Java, in the JVM itself, is keeping your ecosystem updated. What I said, the huge trade-off that we do have in Java, keep the compatibility. That means when you move between versions, the impact might be super tiny, especially because the way that we design is to keep this way. So if you are in Java 8 and move to Java 23, 24, whatever, the impact of doing that might be super tiny. Naturally, you can write more code with less methods because you have more SUGA syntax inside Java. So my first advice is keep updated with Java. Every 6 months, we're going to have a release, and we have a huge ecosystem right now. So Spring, Jakarta, Quarkus, Micronauts, and so on.
Yeah, so I think the crux of what you said there, if I remember correctly, before Java 8, the problem was the JVM didn't respect the control groups of Linux, right? So when you run a container and say you have access to one CPU and 120 mega RAM, if the JVM had no idea those constraints were in place, it would outscale what it was doing. It would get, you know, broken to a certain degree and then not work any longer. So you're saying that from Java 8, those are now respected and it plays a part in the container ecosystem, which is really good to know. So, and obviously, I'm assuming, again, I don't know this space, but Java's not oblivious to the fact that containers and Kubernetes exist over here. So they're considering this a target platform. Containers and production is where the JVM, whoever the governing bodies are, the Eclipse Foundation and others, want to push the project forward so that it is a first-class citizen. Is that a correct assumption?
Yes, yes. If you have several companies, organizations looking for it, that's where we should go. For example, a long, long time ago, the OpenJDK, the JVM reference implementations, because yes, in Java, we have the specifications, we do have the spec, and we have multiple implementations. The one, the reference implementation used to be a Mercurial, and because a lot of people did a pressure to move to GitHub, with the organization decided to move on to GitHub because they want to collaborate even more. So yes, basically, we are driven by community because a lot of people, committers, are from the community, including myself, for example.
So now my thought process is, right, Java is modernizing, is container native to a certain degree, is moving in the right direction to be where other software is in 2025, right? From my understanding, again, so limited, and I wish I had done a bit more Java in my life, right?
Don't worry.
The JVM...
We just had that on recording, by the way.
No! What I mean is, JVM was
you leave Java,
famous.
But could be worse. You could leave Rust.
Whoa.
I'm kidding.
Oh, here we go.
Read the room.
Go ahead.
So I'm really enjoying this.
I think what people always told me when I go to conferences and events, what they loved about the JVM, right, is that you run your application on the JVM and it runs for days, weeks, months, years. The JVM had this wonderful ability to actually dynamically modify code paths over time and optimize, right? How much of that has been sacrificed in order to support ephemeral workloads in Kubernetes? Like, at what point does the JVM stop being famous for its optimization for long-running workloads and hot code paths to just being another runtime in their app? And there's nothing wrong with being another runtime. Rust is just another runtime. Go is just another runtime. There's nothing special about them. But the JVM was always special in that it was enterprise. It was mainframey. It did optimizations. And this is now going away. What's your thoughts on the trade-offs that are being made?
That's the beauty of Java. As I mentioned before, we do have multiple JVMs. And that means we can have specialized JVMs to each scenario. For example, Azure, they have several JVMs that include one specialized to run containers. We also have, for example, GraalVM that can convert your code to native. It's super doable to use as native. For example, if I want to use serverless, I don't need to have garbage collector in that situation, right? I'm going to up the application, run, and kill the application. I don't need to have JIT. I don't need to have garbage collector. I don't need to have any enhancement around the JVM because at the end, I will start, run, and kill. So in Java, as I said, we do have a huge ecosystem to make it that configurable, or you can change the product if you don't change your code. And that's the beauty of Java. So, okay, I want to use right now the GraalVM and convert my code to native because I want to use serverless. Okay, go ahead. You might change your framework, and that is it. Or I want to use a Azure. Go ahead. And we have a couple of JVM implementations to make it possible.
Okay, I think the title of this episode is just going to be the one where David was ignorant because I'm learning so much about what I don't know about the Java ecosystem. Like the fact that there's multiple JVM implementations. Again, as far as I was concerned, it was just the Sun Microsystem one. You go to the website, you click download. So like, my knowledge in this space is very, very dated. But I have, you know, through my periphery, kept an eye on the Graal project, because I've always thought it's really interesting that they're allowing you to take GVM languages and get that native code. Essentially, to the best of my understanding, cross-compilation from Java bytecode to ELF binaries or whatever system you're targeting. Is that correct?
Yes, especially because right now we do have the serverless reality, right? The point of Java is the same challenge that we do have for any software. Java is 30 years old, right? Nobody realized that you're going to need serverless application 30 years, right? And that is what Java is doing. So it's make it possible using all the best techniques of the evolutionary architecture. So refactoring your code, if you don't change the behavior, and make modules to make it possible to have multiple scenarios. I used to say that open source goes beyond philosophy. It's the most advanced software engineer in the world. I mean, if you want to learn how to do a good software, just go to any open source project. We can do that using tests to keep the behavior. You can have a good documentations. You can leave if you doubt thousands of meetings. We can write emails instead of that. That might look impossible for you who is manager, but yes, we can survive if you doubt manager, if a lot of meetings.
Right.
If someone had told me an hour ago that they were doing Java as serverless, I would have laughed. And now I'm like, shit, I'm going to have to try this.
Now, I haven't really done a lot of Java myself since like 6 years ago or something like that. But I have heard a lot about various projects. I think I've heard a little bit about Quarkus. I don't know much about it. But I guess my question is, like, how big is this ecosystem now? Like, I kind of am in the same spot as David in that I don't know a ton about it, but I've heard a lot of various bits and pieces here and there.
Wow.
So like, is it like there's hundreds of thousands of options, or are we talking really there's only like two or three that you probably should explore first before diving into the rest of it?
No, we have a huge ecosystem in Java. Quarkus is the one, for example. We do have a Spring. If you want to use, for example, more the Java Enterprise specification or Jakarta, for example, we can see Glassfish, Piranha, Helidon, OpenLiberty. It's a huge amount of implementation. If I should do a ballparking, I guess around 25, 30 ecosystems that you can use and explore.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Do you think is the best one? I know, I'm asking you to name your favorite.
None of those. Rust is.
Oh, there we go. David just had a big grin. There we go. You knew it was coming.
But I'm super Rusty. So I start to doing the record team Rusty right now.
There you go.
Well, this was lead on to my next question. So absolutely perfect segue here, right? But I wanted to ask you a personal question. There's possibly a hard question, right? I'm assuming you're aware other languages exist, right? You probably played with some. As you said, you could maybe do a little bit of Rust. I would love to know, what is your draw to Java? Like, when you look at all these languages and you think, this is cool and this is cool, or maybe you can even share two other languages you think are interesting. But then, at the end of the day, you are saying, I like to write Java. And I'd love to know, how do we sell it to the people listening to this episode? Why should they write Java? So tell me, why did you come back to it?
I enjoy a lot of language. Jokes aside, I tried Rust, Kotlin, Python, and I do believe tools are tools, right? I need to use the best choice to my scenario. I really believe that. Doesn't matter how amazing Java is not religion. It's just the best option in the world, but it's not religion.
All right, let me reframe that question for you then.
Sorry.
Because you dodged it very nicely.
It's supposed to be serious. Let's just...
There's no seriousness on this podcast. Okay, so it's fine. The more trolling of David we can do, the better.
But... Okay, I take a note on that.
Well, what I'm thinking is, right, what we want people to get away is a fresh perspective on Java, right? I know myself coming into this, you know, we've got blinkers. You know, I've been writing Rust for a while, Go for longer than that. And, you know, to me, Java has this perception in my head of just being an antiquated enterprise language. And that's not the case. I know that's not the case, yes. But we have these, you know, misconceptions. And what I want people to walk away from this episode with is, well, maybe I should give it a second look and maybe I should play with it. But the crux of the question is, they want to write cloud-native microservices. And you're not going to go download the GVM and do that right away. There's decisions that need to be made. I'm assuming this comes down to adopting a framework that is microservice ready. But, you know, maybe in 3, 4, 5 steps, yes. however many it takes, give the audience that journey. If you want to write a microservice right now in Java, what are their options and what do they have to do?
Okay. As I said, we have a huge amount of solution in the market. Let's use Lara's sample. He mentioned Quarkus, right? So I can do a microservice with two classes, where one is my entity class and my second one is my interface. And that is it. Right now, I do have my CRUD operation using REST, and I can move it to a cloud native or a container, whatever wish. So you can really make it fast with Java, especially with the newest frameworks. The biggest challenge with Java is people are learning Java 1.4 and believe that Java did not change for that. No offense, David, but it changed a lot. And what happened also is we have new modern frameworks with Java. So Spring does a really beautiful job. As I mentioned, Quarkus with two classes, Spring provides something pretty similar to that.
Of course, the beauty of Java is the ecosystem. You can have Quarkus with pretty similar capabilities using two interface or so on.
I want to use Spring, so you can explore Spring data where you define your entity, and then with the interface, they will handle the whole database connection for you. Or you want to use everything by your bare hands, go for it. You have a huge amount of flavors from Java. The easiest way, as I said, or the most complex way, for some random reason, once you learn how the things happen behind, you can go explore for it. About why I learned Java, the stability of the language, the ecosystem, the community. A huge amount of people are behind Java right now. So if you compare it to another language, for example, as far I know, Microsoft C Sharp only has a single company behind it, right? That is Microsoft. So if Microsoft decided to, okay, I want to move, the language is gone. In Java, the chance that's happened is pretty low, because if Oracle decide to leave, okay, we do have another huge amount of organizations working on Java right now. Again, thousands of JVMs, thousands of solutions, and so on. And we, inside the JCP, we do have the Java education ecosystems to take a look on how to learn Java and take care of the new generations. That's why we do have the RAB and new features to make sure that people can learn easily Java and break this myth about Java is super hard, is understandable, and so on. And another point that I'd love to highlight in Java is mainly because Java is a production language. And this verbose is to make easy to read and understand your codes, especially because on production, on finance, we also need to read code. It's not about writing features. It's about to read and maintain what you have. And sometimes we have code for 10, 15 years ago. So it needs to be readable as much as possible. So it's a trade-off with language. At the end, we are handled with the language design and language decisions. And naturally, okay, I'll explore the verbosity of Java here to make it more readable, or I will try to reduce as much as possible, make the code sometimes not readable. But even if that, Java has, for example, the var variable. So you can do the var a equals something. So the ecosystem Java is super driven. So come to Java.
Fuck, I think I want to write some Java. All right.
And do you want to go first? Every time that you download Java, the JVM right now, you will receive a wine, free wine by David.
Oh.
Oh,
what?
How about that?
Wait, what's this? I I guess one of my questions is, how often do you run into the misconception that Java is still all Oracle after they, you know, because Sun is the originator of Java, and everybody thinks that, oh, look, Sun got bought by Oracle, therefore Java is an Oracle thing. How often do you run into that?
See the question all the time.
Oh, I bet.
Every single day. Especially because if you look to another language, it's not happen more often, right? For example, Kotlin, usually it has a huge community, but it's supported by a unique company, Go, if I'm not mistaken, the same. If you look into, I guess, PHP has a different approach, but in general, we do have a huge company behind with people contributing into. So naturally, the people think about, okay, it might be the same with Java, but not. Java has a huge JSP, Java community process, to make sure that we do have a huge transparency on the JSR, the Java specification request, where people can vote, can review, and it does not belong only to a single company. It's a failure tolerance in the process.
Right.
You mentioned Kotlin there. I think that's the programming language that spun out of JetBrains, if I remember correctly, right?
Yes.
There's also Scala, there's Clojure. I'm sure there's other major JVM-based languages. Like, are they still important in 2025, given the fact that the Java language itself is continuing to evolve? Is the need for these other languages becoming less, or are those still pushing forward and innovating in their own right? And at what point do you jump between the languages when you're on the JVM, or do you stick firmly within the Java camp itself?
I usually stay with Java and the JVM specification. But as highlight, the JVM does not understand the Java code. The JVM understands bytecode. So at the end, if the language generates bytecode for Java, it doesn't matter. Okay, about those languages from Java, like Scala, Kotlin, and so on, those have some specialization, some niche. For example, as far as I know, Kotlin goes mostly around mobile application with Android. Scala goes more to functional programming, if I'm not mistaken on that. I do believe those are important and make the Java ecosystem great. However, those go more to the niche, and Java brings more the generic approach. So you can do a little bit of functional programming with Java. You can do a little bit of object-oriented programming Java, data-oriented programming Java, and so on. So it's not specialized like another language, but with Java, you can do a little bit of those features directly.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Is there any question you would like us to ask you before we wrap this up?
Do you know why we have Google Chrome and Slack right now?
No.
So you want us to ask you, so why do we have Google Chrome and Slack right now?
To prove the JVM is not happy, like everybody said.
Interesting.
I don't get it.
You can elaborate if you want.
I'm really happy. This is giving me a lot of food for thought. Like, I never thought I'd be considering writing any Java, but knowing that it's a language that's modernized to the point I can run it successfully in a container. I love what Apple are doing with Pickle, and I'm like, you know, am I missing out on something by not playing with it? Like, my old rusty head is going, oh, maybe I need to start poking this thing again. So
now I know why you kept shoving all that Java code off onto me when we were at the same company. Yeah, okay. I understand now.
Thanks for joining us.
If you want to keep up with us, consider subscribing to the podcast on your favorite podcasting app, or even go to cloudnativecompass.fm.
And if you want us to talk with someone specific or cover a specific topic, reach out to us on any social media platform.
Until next time, when exploring the cloud native landscape, on three.
On three.
One, two, three. Don't forget your compass.
Don't forget your compass.